Hey everybody, welcome to Beat the Bank Boot Camp Week 2. I'm so excited to be here with you guys today. It is just another beautiful day, and I'm so excited to get y'all rolling and making money and just doing so good in the real estate investing business. So last week, we really just talked a whole lot about short sales and the banks and tried to give you a basic understanding of why they were hard to do. And again, not they weren't hard. You just really had to have contacts further up inside of the banking industry. And now, this week, we're just going to review. I did tell everyone, get yourselves 100 signs. So you're supposed to have we buy houses cash, rehabbers wanted, landlords wanted, and maybe like a facing foreclosure with a question mark. And I told everyone to do that and get 25 signs out. Now I realize this is the second week, so some of you probably don't actually have your signs yet. Because if you even if you order them like the second you got off the call, they've probably just be coming now. So I just want to tell you straight up, get 25 signs out. I want you to put out a total of 100 during the 6-week period. So if that means that you start this week and the second week, just putting out your 25 signs, then you do them in the second week, the third week, the fourth week, and the fifth week. Your signs come next week, and so on. But I do want you using signs because I just really don't want you using. I don't want you mailing postcards. I don't want you wasting money on other stuff. I don't know. Signs are just so easy. And if you want to buy some of the late leads, those are the leads that we use. We get the leads from the a guy that runs reports for us. So we get a guy that runs reports for us from the credit bureau. So we buy leads that are 30, 60, and 90 days late. 30, 60, and 90 days late. And we love those leads. They're really good leads. 30, 60, 90 days. They're good leads. And that's what we do. We get them from the credit bureau. So if you're interested in that, you can certainly contact Ayla and she can help you get leads. You have to buy, gosh, I don't even know. I think 1,000 for $4.99, something like that. But we have to put in, we have to order enough to have 5,000. So what we do is whenever we have a couple students, they're like, okay, I'm putting in my lead order. They put their lead orders in, and then we'll put our lead order in. And we pay for them too. The funny thing is, we pay the exact same thing as you. We actually don't make any money on the leads because I feel like, it's $4.99. What are we gonna make? $100? It's not even worth it for that. So we just get the leads for you guys, and of course we use them for ourselves too. So we really love those leads. There are also leads at the public record, so that's another place that y'all can get. You can find out all your deals in the public records. So I'm going to give you that as one of your assignments. And on the public records, you would have the foreclosures, the divorces, the probates. Foreclosure. Wait, hold on. I'm missing one. Foreclosure, divorce, probate. You would have landlords who have done evictions, and so those are things that are public record. People whose properties haven't sold at the tax sales. All of those. Oh, and bankruptcy. That's the one I'm missing. It's like, hang on now. I'm missing one, but it'll come to me in just a second. All right, and bankruptcy. So those are the things that are at the, now the bankruptcy is at the federal building, and the foreclosures, divorces, probates, evictions, and taxes should all be over at the county building. And honestly, if you just get those leads right there, just those leads, and then you get some of the 30, 60, and 90-day leads, that's all you need, plus putting out your signs. You do not need to run pricey ads. You don't need to mail expensive postcards. I mean, all that stuff's in my program, and I give you every way I've ever done to do houses and ever to find them. And all of those work and all of those are good, but I swear to you will get just as much business if you just go put out signs in the vacant yards and you just go talk to the people on the lately list. We get more deals than we could ever imagine. Our students are closing deals like crazy. Y'all should be looking on our Facebook page, on the Investors Edge University Facebook page. We're posting copies of people's checks. They're crazy high. We just put a recent one up for $187,000. That's like crazy, crazy. That's cray cray. But you know what? That was some check. I was like, oh my God, yay! Because this guy's an apprentice student and we trained him. It's been about 6 months since we trained him. So he's closed a couple, a little $25,000 deal and a $37,000. And then he sent me a copy of that check, 187. I was like, oh my Lord, you are a rock star. So it was pretty cool. So obviously, read the foreclosure fortunes. It has all kinds of ways to find houses. I've been to auctions. We bought bulk properties. We've mailed postcards. We've mailed letters. We put signs up. We put business cards out. We put flyers out. I mean, just everything. We go to other RIAs. We've done everything. There's not any. We get them online. We find a lot on Craigslist. I will tell you, we do find a lot of stuff on Craigslist. If you get on Craigslist looking for houses for sale, you'll see a lot of people that actually are in foreclosure. So I will say Craigslist has been very good for us, actually. And my husband is completely addicted to Craigslist. So he is constantly, hey, look what I got. Look what I got. I'm like, oh my God, stop buying stuff. Why do you have so much stuff? So just so you guys know, Bill won't admit it, but secretly he's a hoarder. So what I do is he buys a bunch of crap that we don't even need and stuff I don't want and brings it in the house. And then anytime he travels or, you know, he goes to speak for a couple of days someplace without me, I take so much stuff out of the house. We have two buildings outside. He has no idea. They're so full. I just keep taking stuff out. He'll come back and look around. I know he's looking for something, but he can't remember exactly what it was. Because he buys so much stuff, I don't think he can keep track of it. So don't tell him. But I actually do. I take so much stuff out of the house. And once in a while, he'll ask for something, and I'll just be like, no, I don't know. I don't know, babe. I think you took that out of the house and put it in the building. Oh, okay, because he doesn't really remember. So, girls, if you ever need to get things out of your house, if your husband goes on a vacation or goes out for a night with the guys or something, that's how you get rid of stuff when they're out of the house. So if they see you take it outside, all of a sudden they need it again. No, I need that green fuzzy shirt from 1975. It brought me good luck back 100 years ago. So whatever it is, if they see you take it, they don't want to let it go. So you gotta do like I do. I said just wait until Bill go out of town. And I have just cleaned closets of stuff out of this house and taken things out. Which is why the house always looks so nice. So, but that is another day because I could talk to you all day about hoarding because I have two hoarders in my family, like actual bury alive kind of hoarders. And may I tell you what? They won't part with a piece of paper. It is the most bizarre thing. But anyway, y'all are interested in real estate. So I want you going down to the public records. Now, again, some of the time things that I teach you know, I spend a lot of time trying to explain some of the things, like the bank's point of view yesterday. So when I go through kind of the homeowner's point of view today, because I think the biggest problem with real estate investors is they're so worried and nervous and excited to get their own deal that they're not always paying attention to the homeowner and the mindset. And what is actually happening at the homeowner's end that would make them end up in the public records? Okay, so let's just use foreclosures, divorces, and bankruptcy. Let's just use those as an example. Okay, foreclosure, divorce, and bankruptcy. Now, again, there's probate, which is a whole different thing. You know, someone has passed away, and there's people that's taxes, property have sold, haven't paid the taxes. And then there's people that have done evictions. So it's just all kinds of things. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. foreclosures and divorces and bankruptcies. So let's just say that when the couple first got married, you know, you're in love. Oh, we're going to buy the house together. It'll be in both of our names. We're going to use both of our incomes and qualify for this house. Both of our incomes to qualify for this house. So the homeowners, even back, I don't know, it's been a long time. Maybe it's probably been 17, 18 years, I think, since most people were qualified on just one income, which this is my philosophy. If you want to buy a house that you're going to live in for yourself and you're married, you qualify for the house on one income. That way the second income is sort of like just free extra money. It's not needed to run the household. So with the second income, you can save, you can plan for your retirement, you can go on amazing vacations, you can have nice things. But if you're using both of your incomes to keep your house running and just to make the mortgage payments and things like that, you're going to be house poor all the time till your house is paid off. And, you know, I mean, I know all kinds of people that live in gorgeous, gigantic houses, and they're so broke, they can't even ever even, like, go out for a glass of wine. So if you can qualify on one income, then the other income actually can be used for other things. I'm telling you, you'll be happier. You'll have a whole heck of a lot more money, and you will not find yourself in a house poor situation. Because a house poor situation requires one of a few things. One of you gets a massive raise, one of you gets a second job, or you sell the house and get a cheaper house. And if you owe what your house is worth, that's not going to happen. So you're back to a massive raise, probably not going to happen. So what ends up happening is people end up getting a second job so that they can pay for their house. And if you're working two jobs and your spouse is working one and you have kids and you're running around doing all the things that you do, when are you having time to enjoy your house? Probably not. All right. So this couple comes along. They took two incomes to qualify for the property. Now it's been 8, 9, 10 years and they're getting ready to go through a divorce. So they go down and they file for divorce and they separate. So one of the incomes is moving out of the house. And the second income isn't enough to pay for the house. So let's just say that the dad moves out and the dad may be paying some child support and a little alimony or trying to help the wife out some so they can get the house sold. But what happens is the dad's got to live somewhere too. And so now you have two people paying for two separate residences, which is two payments of rent or mortgage. It's two electric bills, water bills. I mean, it's two of everything. And they already just only qualified for the one house. So now they're going through the divorce. So then they can't make the payments and the house ends up going into foreclosure. So everybody goes and looks at the foreclosure records, but you should be looking at the divorce records because most of the foreclosures are caused by divorce. They're caused by, I mean, some are obviously caused by a probate, loss of a job, you know, different things like that. You know, maybe you cut in wages, laid off, whatever. I mean, obviously those things happen. But more often than not, I would say that couples get divorced and they can't afford the house anymore. So now they're in the divorce records. But people go like, investors. Oh, I don't really want to deal with divorce people. They're always fighting. Bah. And you got all these reasons and excuses why you don't want to do that. And so investors just overlook and they're just like, yeah, I don't really want to deal with that. So you let it go. Then after a few months of the divorce, now they're in the foreclosure records. You're like, oh, okay, yay. Okay, not yay, but, you know, now they're in foreclosure. So now I've got somebody I can go help. Let me go help these people that are in foreclosure. Then you go to the house and you find out that maybe the woman is living there. And then now you have to find the husband and you got to deal with both of them separately. And, you know, it can be easy and sometimes it's not. It just depends on how bitter they are. And then, you know, a few more months or a year roll along and the foreclosure sale date is coming up. The house is getting ready to go to sale in a week. And boom, they go down and file bankruptcy. So I want you to write this down. This is a really super important statistic. 75% of the people, 75% of the people that file a bankruptcy do it within 72 hours of the sale of their property. Okay, did you get that? So 75% of the people that file a bankruptcy do it within 72 hours of the sale of their house. So they went through a divorce. They ended up in the foreclosure records. The house is going to sale in 72 hours. And they go down and file a bankruptcy to stop the sale of the house. That's how they do it. They go to stop the sale of the house because they're not ready to move yet. Or maybe they haven't, not even ready to move. They haven't been able to save any money, even though they're not paying the mortgage payment. They're still trying to support the household. Even if you stop making your mortgage payment, like the wife is living in the house and she stops making the mortgage payment, if she's not getting help from the husband or not very much help, her regular income probably just goes to pay for the food and all the rest of the stuff. And the same with the husband. He's living over someplace probably where he might not want to live and having to pay, you know, rent and all the stuff like that. And the money just, it's not enough to go around. Yeah, that's why I think it's just a terrible idea when couples buy houses to have to qualify with two incomes. Qualify on one so that, I mean, God forbid you get divorced, the one income can still afford the house. Even if it's the husband, the wife can move someplace else. You know what I mean? Everybody can move. Because if you go into foreclosure, guess what? You're going to move. Anyway, so I know it's terrible to say, like, plan like you're going to get divorced. But you have to plan like you're not going to get divorced. But be smart about it. Like, one income. And, you know, each individual person having their bank accounts and their own retirement and savings and just all this different stuff like that. You just have to plan. You have to just plan like it might happen and then pray it doesn't. And then you'll be a whole lot better off in the long run financially if you work that way from the beginning. So 75% of the people file bankruptcy within 72 hours of their house. So where would be a really good place to find people that are in trouble? In the bankruptcy department. And I tell you what, I ask that question all the time when I go and teach workshops. And people, no one ever says bankrupt. I'm like, how do you not? It's right there. I just laid it out on a silver platter for you. Where to get the deals? Check out the bankruptcy. So now, some of you are thinking, well, you can't work with people that are in bankruptcy. Of course you can. Of course you can. People that have filed bankruptcy, they usually have their credit cards listed. They have their house listed, their cars. They have whatever debt they have. They have everything listed. It is very, very easy for a homeowner by themselves that are not even dealing with, that aren't even dealing with the bankruptcy attorney. They went and filed on their own. It's so easy for them to contact the bankruptcy court and show them a copy of a sales contract for the contract and sale and purchase of their home. And they say, hey, we sold the house. Would you keep me in bankruptcy, but just release my property? I can get the property sold. And then with the money from the house sale, I can get on a payment plan with everything else, or I can pull myself completely out of bankruptcy. So bankruptcy is a really good tool. And we will talk about it more Probably in like maybe the fourth or fifth week, we'll go through the whole bankruptcy timeline because it is really interesting and it's really important that you know it. And it comes up a lot. I mean, a lot. I don't even know. 75% of the houses that we deal with, there's a bankruptcy already involved. So it comes up a lot. So you want to understand it and not how to work it, but just how to understand it so you can basically talk intelligently about it. That's kind of the way it works. So, if I were brand new and I know what I knew today, I would probably bypass everything at the county records except for the bankruptcy people, because 75% of those people are getting ready to lose their house like right now. They're not losing their house in 6 months, they're not losing their house in a year. It's right now. They filed within 72 hours. So if 100 people filed bankruptcy, 75 of them were just going to lose their house this very week right now. So those people are very motivated to get out of their situation. They filed the bankruptcy because they're not ready to move or relocate at this exact moment. Now, that does not mean that they're in denial. That doesn't mean that they're not going to want to work with you. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. It just means that right now, this very second, they're not ready to do anything. So, if they're not ready to do anything and they're in trouble right now, that's when you should be showing up to help. This is like, the cavalry coming in at the last minute. And there you are. You're the cavalry. You're the foreclosure cavalry. And so I like people like there. And I also like putting out the signs because then the people are calling me and saying, "Hey, I saw your sign." And they say, "Oh, okay." And they're like, "I'm losing my house. I'm in trouble. Whatever. We're going through a divorce. We lost a job. Someone got sick. Something, 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 something. And we need some help. What can you do?" So I like it when people call me. I know you guys like it when people call you because the biggest fear for all of the new investors. And I ask this everywhere I teach for like all the 20 years I've been teaching. Like, what's your biggest fear? And they're always like, "I don't know. We don't know what to say. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do next." And because of that, everyone lets fear stop them, which is mind-boggling to me because when I started off, I didn't know anything. And I went door knocking with a baby hanging on my hip. Without a single clue of what I was doing. So I didn't even know what I was doing. All I knew is I didn't want my daughter to go to daycare. So I had a healthy fear of daycare. I didn't have a fear of homeowners. I had a fear of daycare. And so it never stopped me. As I thought, well, I don't care what they say. I'll just go on to the next person. If they get mean or they're mad or they don't want to work with me, I'll just go to the next person. Somebody needs my help. Somebody wants my help. I'll just keep going till I find the person that does. And so that's how my attitude was. And that's why I did so well in the beginning, because I think being as naive as I was probably my greatest asset when I started. Because of my naivete, I didn't have a fear of anything or anyone or getting stopped by something. None of that even occurred to me because I didn't know those things could exist. Or that anyone would ever be rude, or that anyone would never not want I mean, who wouldn't want my help? That's what I thought. I really was like that. Like, well, who possibly would not want my help? It has to be crazy not to want my help. I'm here to help them. So being naive and not having a lot of experience, honestly, is why I think I became so successful because I didn't have any bad habits to break and I wasn't afraid of stuff and I hadn't built up any things in my mind of getting chewed out or not knowing what to say next. I didn't know what to say at all. So there was no worrying about what to say next. I didn't know what to say at all. And when I first started, I legit would say to people, "This was my original script. Again, I don't know what to say." So I would go to people's houses and knock on their door and say, "Hey, I would say exactly this. I see you're at the courthouse," which I still say that. "See you're at the, I was at the courthouse and I see that you well, no, I don't say this exact thing, but I still say the part about I was at the courthouse or I was doing some research, and I see that you have a pending problem. But what I would say, so I was at the courthouse and I noticed that your house is in foreclosure. And I'm just wondering, like, how soon could you move out and I could move in and rehab it and fix it up and I could get you some money? And like, how fast could you move? Like, right out of the gate. That was my first thing. So people are standing there. I can just only imagine. They're standing there looking at me. I'm standing there with a baby on my hip, knocking on the doors. And people don't even know who I am. And they're probably, you know, people have to process the fact that you're at their door. And instead of just like, oh, hey, you know, this and that, I was just like, yeah. So I see you're in foreclosure and you're losing your house. And I'd actually like to buy the house and I'm going to fix it up and I'm going to sell it. And just how quick could you get out? Like, are you guys ready to move? Like, now? How fast could you move? So, no, gladly, people were never rude to me. I think they just looked at me like, you poor little thing, you don't know what you're doing. So, nobody was ever rude to me, but people would look at me and be like, no, we're not ready to move. And they would just hang up or close the door. And I thought, well, these people, and sometimes they'd be, no, no, wait, don't close the door. I said, you need help. You're in foreclosure. You're going to lose your house in the next couple of months. What are you doing? You got to get out of here. You're like done. And amazingly, no one shot me or killed me. Nobody yelled at me. Nobody was awful to me. Nothing like that happened. Like, people worry about all that stuff. None of that stuff happened. And I just did really well. Now I think that people are a little bit more educated. You know, there are more trainers out there. There's a lot of webinars. So you all are exposed to more. And because you're exposed to more, now you have the fears. You've been to a bunch of rehab meetings and you hear horror stories. You're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. What if, what if, what if? But I'm going to tell you something. People are really nice. I mean, maybe one out of 100 people that you talk to face-to-face or over the phone or over email, maybe one out of 100 will be like, listen, I don't have a problem. Stop bothering me. Everybody else, honest to God, they're happy that you're there. They're excited that you're going to help them out. They need help, and they know they need help, and they're nice. I mean, they just really are. Homeowners are so sweet. And they need help so bad. And there's so many vultures out there trying to take advantage of them. You be the good person. You be the good in their day and help them get a fresh start. You know, they really will be eternally grateful to you. They really will. So anyway, if you look at the average mindset of the average homeowner, like probably what 75% of your business will be, is you'll go to the door and talk to the homeowners that are in the bankruptcy or they're in foreclosure or they're on the late lead list. And you'll say, hey, I was doing some research and I see you have a pending problem with your property. I specialize in help folks like you solve their problems. I was wondering what I could do to help. Okay, all this stuff's in the program. So you'd be reading your scripts. And they'll say, oh, we took care of it, which is the standard. We took care of it. So in the deal finding program, I have a whole section on repeat, approve, and respond. And that's neurolinguistic program. Repeat, approve, and then respond. Okay, repeat, approve, respond. So it sounds like this. Hi, my name is Swan. I was doing some research. I see you have a pending problem with your property. I specialize in helping folks like you solve their problems. I was wondering what I could do to help. And they say, I took care of it. So now here's where the repeat. Oh, you took care of it. Great. That's repeating. That's approving. Responding is answer is asking the next question. Do you mind if I ask you what your attorney has done to help you buy time to stay in your home? And they'll be, well, we haven't hired. Oh, you haven't hired an attorney. Okay, well, that's good. You know, good thing I'm here today. And so what is it you guys are thinking about doing? So no matter what they say, you repeat it back. Repeating it back. This is how you build really quick rapport. So by repeating it back, they know that you heard them. By approving, oh, good, you know, that was a good decision. Or like, interesting. Whatever it is, that means that but you like to try to give a good response when you can, because what their brain hears is this person thinks I make good decisions. Now, in a world of people who are not making good decisions right now, hearing about a good decision is exciting for them. So they go, oh, okay, this person thinks I make good decisions. Okay, that's good. So you're repeating and approving, and then responding is just asking the next question. And the reason you use repeat, approve, respond, A, is called neuro-linguistic programming. My husband Bill specializes in it. He is the king of NLP. He teaches it. I think he's the only one in the real estate arena that teaches NLP specifically for real estate investors. But it builds instant rapport because it makes your brain, like in the subconscious, it talks to the subconscious part of your brain, and it makes your brain kind of wake up and take notice. And it helps them bond with you as quickly as possible, because you really are all about getting them to bond with you as fast as you can by repeating, improving, responding. Now, here's what happens. Down the road, let's just say it's 5 years from now, and you're kicking butt, you're taking names, and you've learned all your NLP. You've even taken one of Bill's NLP courses, and you've taken a scripts course, and you are a master real estate investor. And you know your scripts like the back of your hand. Like Bill, he knows his scripts so well. Well, when you learn them so well, sometimes your responses become automated, and the very reason that you learned it in the first place was so you would listen better by saying things like, oh, you know, you lost your job, I'm sorry. You know, what are you guys doing? Oh, you called an attorney. Interesting. What's your attorney doing? You know, whatever. And so I was with Bill one day. True story. Well, they're all true stories, but true story. We're knocking on the door. And this girl answers the door, and so Bill goes in, you know, I'm Bill Twyford, we're doing some research, and, you know, pending problem, and how people like you, and how did you get yourself in the situation? And she said, my grandmother died. And Bill just sucked into the conversation, he's ready to pounce on the next question. He said, oh, your grandmother died? Great, what have you done to solve the problem? I looked at him, and she looked at him, and she looked at me, and then he's like, what? And I said, seriously? She just said her grandmother died. And he looked back at her. He's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I just said great. Is this not great? No, that's not great at all. That's not great. Your grandmother died. I am so sorry. It was so funny. We all didn't even know each other. We stood there laughing, and Bill's face was so red. And he was so embarrassed. And I think this girl felt sorry for him. And she's like, oh, just come on in. I need help. Because she was a young girl, probably in her late 20s. Her grandmother had died. She didn't know what to do with this property. And she's like, I really do need some help. And she says, there's all kinds of people knocking on my door, people sending me letters and talking to me. And she's like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing right now. I really do need help. So it worked out. It worked out really good that we were the ones that showed up, and we were the ones that were able to help her. It was just so funny because Bill's like so locked into his script that he stopped listening to people. He would just go, okay, great, next question, great, next question, great, next question. I was like, honey, you gotta slow your roll, man. You gotta listen. You teach people NLP so they'll learn to listen, and you're so scripted, you stopped listening yourself. So it really was one of those moments. So, so funny. You have to tell Bill, like, oh, yeah, I heard about that repeating, approving, responding, that grandmother comment, because it so embarrasses him. Because he did. He's like, oh, your grandmother died? Great. What if you didn't solve the problem? And it just kept rolling. It's like, oh, my God. So we have a lot of fun when we're out and about. So anyway, so you're doing, you know, getting a situation, and they say I hired an attorney. Oh, I hired an attorney. Interesting. Now, this is a great one. When they say they hired an attorney, is my favorite answer. Because then we say, what loopholes is your attorney using in the foreclosure system to buy you time to stay in your house? And people love the word loopholes. And they'll be, loopholes? What do you mean? What do you mean loopholes? Well, surely your attorney is using loopholes to help you buy time and stay in your property. And they'll be like, no, I don't know anything about loopholes. Tell me about that. So it's really a great way to get people to engage with you because they want to hear. Well, loopholes could be anything, you know, getting bankruptcy, doing a loan modification, doing a forbearance agreement, just any kind of restructuring. I mean, attorneys can do anything, but bankruptcy is really the biggest loophole because you can buy the most amount of time using bankruptcy as a stalling tactic. That's why, again, you all need to learn about bankruptcy. So this week, I want you guys to focus on learning some scripts. I want you to practice repeating, improving, and responding. Because when you do it in the beginning, and just find somebody. Just tell, you know, and if you live by yourself, just sit down with your dog or your cat or, I don't know, talk to yourself up. Just talk to yourself out loud. It doesn't really matter. But you have to practice repeat, improve, respond. Because the thing is, if you don't practice it before you get in front of a homeowner, then what you're doing is you're actually practicing on a potential client. And you don't want to practice on a potential client because they actually do need your help. And for you to sit there and just be like, and you're stumbling all over yourself, they're not going to have a very high confidence in you. And the thing is, every homeowner has a confidence meter. So when they first meet you, that confidence meter, it's way up here. It's way up. Like, hey, this person knocked on my door. They're saying all these right things. They seem to know what they're doing. And then as you open your mouth, the confidence meter just goes tick, 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 down, 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 tick, 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 tick. And then pretty soon it's at zero. And when the confidence meter goes to zero, there's nothing you can really do to help the people at that point. So you got to be prepared. And the thing and the fears that you have, like fear of knocking on doors, that's why I love people to do the apprentice training. Because when we take them out and they've been to like their third door, they're just like, no, you guys sit in the car. Let me just go door by myself. I got it. They get it so fast. They understand what's going on. They're just like, I got it. Don't worry about it. And off they go. It's just like they just take off like little birds leaving the nest. And Bill and I have such a good time doing apprentice trainings because some people will go on the first day. By the end of the first day, they're like, nope, I got it. And other people, it'd be the second day. And somewhere along the day, everyone's like, nope, I got this one by myself. And I'm like, oh, there's another one of our baby birds kicked out of the nest. They went off on their own. Then they're up there standing at the door by themselves. And every time, 100% of the time, people come back and they're like, I do not know what I was so afraid of. This is so easy. I have had myself so worked up. This is a piece of cake. I have no idea what I've been so terrified of. And that's exactly what's going to happen with you. You may be listening to me today, and I know there's a lot of you on this call. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, if that girl thinks I'm door knocking, got another thing coming. I am not going to do it that way. I'm going to mail postcards because it's safe. You know what? It's not safe. It's such a waste of money. Oh, my. Stop wasting your money, guys. Grow a pair of cojones and get out there and do it like I tell you to do it. Because don't you guys want to close a check in like the next 30, 37, 40 days? Don't you all want a check in your hand? Yes? Is that a yes? Is everybody shaking their head? Yes, Dwan, we do. We want to be Dwanators. We want to have checks. Well, that's not going to happen if you guys don't grow some balls. So you got to get out there and you just have to do it. So all your fears are gone. You've listened to my soothing voice over this boot camp. You got it. You're like, okay, I'm ready to go. Dwan says it's easy. She did it with a baby hanging on her hip with no script at all. At least I have a script to follow. I'm going to learn how to repeat. I'm going to approve. I'm going to respond. I'm going to get homeowners that want to work with me. It's going to be easy. God's just going to bring me the business. This is just going to be great. That's your mindset. That's what you tell yourself every day. And whatever you say out loud, your brain eventually believes it. So if you keep saying every day, I'm an amazing real estate investor. People love me. There are people today that cannot wait for me to come and help them. And you keep telling yourself that, then pretty soon you'll be like, you know what? The people are waiting. That's how I feel. Every time I do a call like this, I'm like, there are people that need my help. There are people that would like to be millionaires that are not, and they're never going to be. If I don't get on and help them and teach them and train them, they're going to be exactly the way they've been their whole life, and I just can't have that happening. I've got to train people, and I've got to make more millionaires, and I've got to get more Dwanators out there that are going and helping people that are losing their houses, and we're helping people all over the country. And so I feel that way every time. So if someone chooses not to work with me, I never think like, oh, well, you know, too bad for me. I didn't get to train those people. I'm always like, well, hey, honey, trust me, it is your loss. In the big picture, you'll wish you would have taken the path of Dwan instead of the path of all the drive-by gurus like the Fortune Builders and the Kiyosakis and, oh my gosh, the Shark Tank guy now and all these people. Just, it's a seminar mill. And there's nothing wrong. That seminar mill is a very profitable business if you want to be in the seminar business. But I want to be in the real estate education business. So therefore, I'm not part of the seminar mill because they don't actually teach you stuff. They make you spend a bunch of money. Sure, many of you on this call have already done it. And you're like, oh my gosh, I have $50,000 in credit card debt because I went to the last seminar mill that rolled through town. And my thought is always to say, hey, listen, it doesn't matter what you spent. Let's just say you spent 50 grand over there and you've gone to 3 or 4 boot camps and you've learned a little bit. You've got a couple of really good golden nuggets of information. So you're good. Let's just take it from there and let's help you make back all that money and get all that money back so you can say, ha, I did it. And then let's make more money. And let's get you financially free. And then next time a big giant seminar rolls through town, you'll know better than to go get sucked up into a bunch of stupid stuff. So stop doing that. All right. Now, also in the deal finding program, it tells you what to wear. So you're out talking, you're working with homeowners. Read everything about it, like all the way down to the cologne and the perfume. Read all the stuff I said, what to wear, colors, look sweet and wonderful and amazing and professional and helpful. Okay, girls, don't be showing too much skin. And guys, well, just, you know, dress nice. Get rid of the beards. Get rid of the mustaches. Get rid of those stupid baseball hats. I am so sick of seeing men wear baseball caps. I want to shoot them. It's like, who has taught our men to wear hats all the time? My goodness. What has happened? All right. So, my rant. All right. So, I really am so easily distracted. I could rant off on so many things. All right. So, you've got your public records. You are prepared and you're ready. And guess what? I hate to tell you, but this week you got to go knock on some doors. So I know you're like, oh man, I don't want to knock on doors. Well, you know, folks, I can't teach you how to do short sales. I can't teach you how to beat the bangs. I can't teach you how to flip the contracts. I can't teach you how to be your landlords, rehabbers. I can't teach anything if you don't have any people to work with. So this week, signs or not, I don't care if your signs have come or not, you are going to knock on 10 doors. Now, I'm really going to up that number quite a bit as we go, but I'm going to give you this week because it's your first week. So I'm going to give you a little Dwan mercy, a little Dwantastic mercy over here, and only make you go 10. Now, 10 is really easy. So for those of you that are already thinking, I do not have time to knock on 10 doors this week. Does she not know how busy I am? And I'm not making that voice like me because of you. I'm just using, that's my sarcastic voice. So I don't know if it sounds sarcastic or not, but it feels sarcastic coming out. So for those of you that are like, I am not doing that. Well, yeah, you are doing that. And you're going to love it. And you're going to tell yourself you're going to love it. And the people are going to be so happy that you did it, and they're going to love you. So here's the thing. No matter how busy you are, you have time. Even if you stop at one house, let's just say you're working 5 days a week. You stop at one house every day on the way home from work. Just on the way home. It might be 20 minutes out of your way. Makes no difference. You stop. And you just walk up and you say, just like it says, just say, hey, I'm Juan. And I was doing some research to see you have a pending problem with your property. I specialize in helping folks like you. And you always say folks like you because then it makes them seem normal, like everybody else, not abnormal, like, oh my gosh, I'm the only one in foreclosure. Especially to help folks like you solve their problems. I just like to ask, what have you done to help get yourself out of your situation? So I hired an attorney. Oh, you hired an attorney. Well, that's a really good move. So what loopholes in the foreclosure business is it in the foreclosure process is your attorney using to help you buy time to stay in your house? And they'll be like, well, or in your home, stay in your home, use the word home. And they'll be, well, I don't know. Well, what do you mean? Has he talked to you about loan modifications, or has he talked to you about bankruptcy? And what's he doing to help you buy time? I don't think he's doing anything. Well, you know what? This is what I specialize in. Would you mind if I just take a moment here and go through this Fed Up package and show you your 10 options? Because we use the Fed Up package 100% of the time. So can I just go through this Fed Up package and show you your 10 options? And I'm going to leave this package with you because this way you can look over all 10 options and see what they are. And let's pick one that works best for you and let me help you get yourself out of the situation. And they're always like, okay, they're so happy and they're so relieved and they're so grateful. Okay, always so happy, so relieved, so grateful. So that's how we initially speak to people at the door. I do leave them the Fed Up package. If you don't have the Fed Up package, I believe you can go to Investors Edge. You know, contact Ayla. I think it's investorsedgeuniversity.com/FedUp. I couldn't swear. I should have looked before I got on the call, I guess. Contact Ayla back. And she'll take care of you. But we door knock 100% of the time. We leave anyone that answers the door, the Fed Up package. And the people that don't answer the door, we leave them the sorry I missed you. And so they always take the package. They always look at it. It helps you to create value standing at their door. It helps you to create value because you're leaving them 10 items, a packet of like 40 pages with 10 different things that they can do to possibly stay in their home. So they're always really excited. They're always like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you left me all this. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And they're really grateful. Okay, so we use our late leads, we use our deal finding, our wholesaling, our flipping contracts, we use our short sales. We like to use the Fed Up package just because the homeowners really like getting all that free information. And so we do all those things, and with all that combined with just learning scripts, learning, that's how you become a superstar real estate investor, where you really are doing a terrific bang up job. All right. So this week you are going to go knock on the 10 doors. And then in your short sale secrets program, at the end of each section, there's a checklist. If you haven't read through the program yet, there's a really good checklist. And that checklist is for you to make sure you don't forget anything as you begin gathering information to put your short sale packages together. Okay, so you are going to need to read through your programs, go through your checklist. In the 30,000 and 30 days, there is a sample contract. So you can fill out a sample sales contract and kind of familiarize yourself with contracts. It is super important that you use the real estate contract for your state. I do not want you using a real estate contract for any other state. Use the one for your state. And if anybody, I'm telling you this straight up, if anyone, any person, even your real leader, says, oh, I have this really great generic contract. Use this contract. Don't you dare. Because after this whole giant recession thing that we went through, most of the states made adjustments in their standard real estate contract that's been approved by the Board of Realtors. Almost every single state made changes because of all the foreclosures. And you can completely lose your deal a day before the closing because you don't have the right contract. So you get online and you download the contract for your state. And the ones in my program even says, this is for educational purposes only, because it's to show you how to fill out your contract. So when you go talk to your homeowner, I want you to have some FedEx packages with you. I want you to always have printed off authorization to release information. So your authorization to release information, that is the form that the homeowners are going to have to sign in order for you to actually be able to call the bank and try to work with them and see what it is that you can do. So you must have an authorization to release information form signed. And it does not give you any control over the house. You can tell the homeowners, listen, this doesn't mean you're selling your house. This doesn't give me any control. This doesn't do anything other than let me contact the bank and find out exactly what you owe against your house. Because if you don't have enough equity in this house for me to buy it from you, I'm going to have to do a short sale. And then you explain to them what a short sale is. Okay, a short sale is where I contact the bank and I get the bank to take less for the house than what's owed against the property. So, they have a $200,000 house and you want to buy it for $100,000. Now, I want to tell you, so in this program, in the short sale program, in the short sale, in the Beat the Bank boot camps, I do a lot of teaching you things that it's just really so time intensive to write. I mean, I would end up with a 5,000 page program and you wouldn't read it. So I teach you guys a lot of other things. They're in the program and they're in a shorter version, but I do a lot of explaining. Because you are actually in this in a beat the bank scenario, you are actually going to try to buy this house for 50% of the value. So if you say to a homeowner right up front, I'm going to do a short sale. Your house is 200,000, I'm going to get the bank to sell to me for 100. How much money do the homeowners want? Well, now the homeowners want 100,000. Because you're buying it for 100, it's worth 200. So now the homeowners want 100,000. Okay, because that's what they hear you say. So you ask the homeowners before you ever go to contract, ever before you go to contract, you say to the homeowners, how much money would you need to move and relocate and get a fresh start? And you get an exact amount. And let's just say they save $5,000. Okay, the homeowner says $5,000. So then you say to them, well, listen, I'm going to have to do a short sale. That's where I get the bank to take less than what's owed against your property. So I'll figure in my fee. I'll figure in your $5,000. I'm going to try to get the bank to pay you $5 to move. I'm going to ask for more. I'm trying to get the banks to give you guys $5,000 to move. And I got to figure in a spread to leave a lot of money on the table because I'm going to sell the house to a rehab or a landlord. And they're going to have to put in, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. And then they want to be able to make, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on the house too. So in order for me to get you out of the situation, I need to try to get the bank to sell me the house for maybe 50% of the value. But I need you to be very clear, Mrs. Homeowner, and understand that if I get the bank to sell me this house for 50% of the value, that doesn't mean that you and I get to split whatever the rest is because I'm paying you, I'm making a fee for my work, I'm selling it to somebody else, and that person, that's really the person taking all the risk. That's the rehabber. They're going to buy the house. They've got to finance it. They've got to get it fixed up. And then they've got to let it sit on the market during this market, and who knows how long it will take to sell. And so I kind of explained out. I mean, a lot of people are afraid to tell the homeowners that they're going to make any money. They're afraid to, I mean, I can remember way back, like 20 years ago, when people were like, I can't believe you just tell the homeowners that you're going to make money. I'm like, well, why would they think I'm working for free? I already told them I'm a single mom. So why would they expect me or want me? And who the heck wants someone that wants to work for free? So why would they expect me to do that? So I have always been honest from day one with my homeowners about the money. And you got to remember, right now they have a $200,000 house. They have $200,000 on, and they're going to lose it. And they just filed bankruptcy. So they're going to lose all of it. So when you say to them, okay, you want $5,000. Okay, that's perfect. That falls right within the range that I'm able to pay. And I'm going to contact the bank and try to get the bank to pay you that money. And if I can, you know, that would be great. If not, you know, it'll come out of my side. But I'm selling it to a rehabber. I'm doing this and that. And so I will work all the numbers out with the homeowner and just tell them, hey, these are the numbers. But I can't do anything at all with your house if I can't get the bank to take less than what's owed, because you owe too much on your house. According to you, you think you owe $200 and you think it's worth about $200. So that's why I need you to fill out this authorization to release information form so that I can contact the bank and find out exactly what you do owe. And then I can come back with you with some real numbers. And then I can begin my short sale process. And you know what you and I are going to do together? We're going to beat the bank. We're going to, because, you know, the thing is, you've heard that really old saying, enemy of my enemy is my friend. So enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they're mad at the bank. Homeowners never, never say, oh, it's completely my fault. They say, the bank's taking my house. So they're mad at the bank. They're always mad at the bank. That's what's so funny. It really stuns me. Homeowners are always mad at the bank. So I want to be mad at the bank too, because then we both have the same common enemy, which is the bank. So I say, listen, we're going to beat that bank. I'm going to knock them down on the price so far. And then I'm going to get you some money. I'm going to make some money. We're going to sell this house, get someone new, and get you started and get you relocated, get you in a new situation, get you out from underneath all this awful stress that you're in. And we're just going to make your life so great. And it's going to be so good. You're just going to have the best fresh start. I just can't wait to be part of that fresh start with you. And then they're like, yeah, we're going to beat the banks together. So now you're on the same side. Yeah, so it's so easy to build rapport. It's so easy to be on the same side of the fence. It's just so easy. All those things are so easy. So don't be afraid to talk to people about the fact that you are going to make money and you are going to beat up the bank and you're going to do whatever you can so that you can help them get a fresh start and get moving. Stop being afraid of telling people that you're going to make money. People, if people think that you're a real estate investor who does it for free, they're ridiculous. Who would think that unless you're a full-blown charity and you actually do it for free? And if you were doing it for free, I mean, I just, people don't expect that. They know that you need to make money too, okay? So stop being afraid. Everyone always says, oh, don't let homeowners know you're making money. Oh, don't tell them how much you're going to make. Oh, you're going to ruin your deal by doing all that. You know what? Honesty is the best policy. If they think you're not going to make any money at all, they're stupid. Okay? I mean, honestly, who would expect you to do all that work for nothing? I mean, who would? So I started way back when I very first started out. I would tell my homeowners exactly what I was going to make. This is my fee that I make. This is what we're going to give you, and this is what we're going to do, and here's who's going to buy it, and here's what's going to happen. And I always did that. And people were always like, Tawana, are you out of your mind? You can't tell people all that stuff. I'm like, why not? Why can't I tell them? And so I just always have. So I think honesty is the best policy. And that's the way I want you guys to be too. So you have your repeat approve respond down. You're going to practice it so that you don't sound stumbly. And you know what? If you get to the door and you totally freeze up because you're nervous and you forget how to repeat approve respond, just talk and be nice and then go back and practice again. I've gotten to doors and been like, because I don't know what to say. I mean, even today, every now and then now, I'll go knock on someone's door and somehow they'll surprise me. They'll just be like, "Hey, hi, how are you?" Just so friendly and like it takes me back or something. And I'm like, and I'll be, "Oh, hey, I almost forget for a second." And other times people will just open the door and stand there and look at me and they don't say anything at all. I'm like, "Hello? Hello?" So you just never know what you're gonna what you're gonna get. So whatever it is, you just go with it. And if you forget how to repeat and approve and respond on the first couple doors, don't beat yourself up. Don't be like, "Oh no, Duan's gonna be mad." Don't even worry about it. Just roll with it. Okay? It's super easy. All right, now you know to go down to the public records. You know about the late leads. You know about having to have an authorization to release. You absolutely cannot do anything without the authorization to release. Okay, so having them sign that. Always have sales contracts with you. So when a homeowner says, "You know what? I'd love to work with you. I'll sign that authorization. I'll go to contract with you. What do we need to do next?" And that's where you're going to start contacting the bank and finding out what does the bank want you to do next. You know, what does the bank want? I always call the bank. And I straight up say, "My name is Dwan. I'm a full-time real estate investor and I do short sales for a living. I'm working with Mary Smith over at 123 Elm Street. I have a signed sales contract to purchase her property. I have an authorization to release information. Who do I need to get this information to? What else do you need? And how quickly can we get this deal closed?" And what the bank rep hears is, "Wow, I have like 900 files on my desk. And this chick knows exactly what she's doing. She just wants to knock this right out of the ballpark and just do this deal." That's what they hear. So I remember yesterday, we talked, not yesterday, last week. We talked a lot about the bank and what happened and how the poor loss mitigation reps went from having, a fairly good job within the bank to be the actual bottom feeders of the bank. And they're just inundated with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands. They can't possibly, there was no loss mitigator that could possibly go through all the files that they have. It's not humanly possible. And so, with all that in mind, then when you call a bank rep up, now some of you will be like, "Hey, I just took a short sale class. This is my first short sale. Aren't you so excited?" And the bank rep's not going to go, "Me too." The bank rep's going to look at you and be like, "No. We're not excited at all that this is your first short sale. In fact, we don't do short sales." Click. Because people call me all the time and say, "I called a bank and they said they don't do short sales." I said, "Okay, A, it's a bank. B, you're calling a department that's specifically called loss mitigation, which means they do short sales. And you probably said something like, "Hey, do you guys do short sales?" And the bank rep just rolls her eyes and says, "The person's asking me if I do short sales. I'm in the loss mitigation department. They're completely untrained. I'm too busy. They're not qualified." And they say no and hang up on you. And then you call me and go, "But I called Wells Fargo and they said they don't do short sales." Yes, they do. That's why they have a department called loss mitigation. They're mitigating losses. They're getting rid of the losses like foreclosures, short sales, bankruptcies. They're getting rid of properties that are losses. It's the name of the department. So when you get someone that doesn't want to work with you, in this case, I have to tell you, it is actually you. So you say it like I say it. Hi, this is Dawn. But you don't say my name, of course. I am a full-time real estate investor, and I do short sales for a living. See, confidence. My name is Dawn. I'm a full-time real estate investor. I do short sales for a living. I'm working with Mary Smith. Case number 1234567 shows at 123 Elm Street. I have a signed sales contract so that I can purchase her property. I have an authorization to release information signed by her. I need to know if you're the person that I send all this information to, or who do I send this to, and what else do you need from me so I can get this deal closed very quickly. I can have this deal off your desk in at one day. As soon as you will work with me on the numbers, tell me what you need. I can close in 30 days with cash and have this off your books, and it'll be a smooth, this will be the smoothest deal you've ever done, I promise. And the bankrupt hears, I hate my job. Loss mitigation is so stressful. I don't know how I ended up in the bottom feeding position of the bank. And this person says they're a full-time investor and they can do it really quick and they can close with cash and they can do it and not cause me any trouble. And what they say to themselves is, oh my gosh, it'd be so nice to work with a professional. Yes, I'll do a deal with this person. And that's how you get your deals. Yes, I'll do a deal with this person. Sure, Duan, here's what I need. I need a listing agreement and 2 years tax returns. That's what I need. And then you'll be like, all right, I'll get those things to you tomorrow. Hang tight, I'll call you back. We'll be at your desk at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Okay, expect my call at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'm gonna call you back. I'm gonna get you over the listing agreement. I'm gonna get you the tax returns. Where do you need those sent? Email, fax, what do you want? Where do you need them? All right, tell good. All right, I'll get it done. Consider it done. Go to your boss and start finding out what kind of number you can get me on this property. I'll call you back tomorrow. Like it really is that simple. Now, during the downturn, I guess I should just call it a recession. During the recession, I always just say downturn because real estate turned down, but it wasn't a recession for everybody. You know, like for me, it wasn't a recession. I did really well during the recession. So, you know, but other people, you know, lost everything. So, it's a matter, I guess, of what you know. And, you know, for me, I was very lucky. I know a whole lot about real estate. And I wasn't as affected as harshly, or I was definitely affected. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. The speaking business dried up, and I love speaking. And there was not a place, there wasn't a radio group in the country that would hardly have a speaker. And things changed a lot. But gosh, when you just know real estate so well, no matter what, it's always the thing that you go back to. No matter what, you always go back to it because you just know it so well. So anyway, when the bankrupt hears, like, okay, that's great, you're good, I got it. You know, after this deal's all said and done, and I'll tell you this again later, but you know, when it's all done, send them like a nice gift basket, thank you note, you know, flowers if it's a girl. I don't know, guys. You know, so I send them those baskets that have like the meat and the cheese and the sausages and the crackers and you know that kind of, which I actually like those kind of things myself. So send them something. And thank them and stay in touch and write them a letter of recommendation and be really super good to that bankrupt. So the very next time you get a deal from that same bank or that same servicing company or whatever it is, you ask for the same person you worked with before and say, hey, this is Dwan. Remember that deal that we did that was so great? And I sent you that gift basket. Oh, Dwan, hey, what's up? And say, I've got another deal. It's with your bank, but it's a different rep. Do you think that you could, do you think you could get this deal, move this file and transfer, and you and I could work together again? 9 out of 10 times, 9.9 out of 10 times, the bank rep can grab the file from another person, and then now you work with the same person again. Then you get another one, Wells Fargo. Another one comes in from a servicing company at Wells Fargo or something. You call the same person. Hey, this is Dwan. Remember the last two deals we did? Man, they were so great. I had so much fun working with you. You were so great. And I sent you that little goodie bag. And you remember me, right? Oh, yeah, Dwan. Yeah, I know who you are. Okay, so I've got another deal. So, you know what? now that we've worked together a couple of times, and this is getting easier and easier and easier, you just tell me what you need, and let me tell you what I want to offer, and let's just see if we can work it together without all this back and forth stuff. Oh, okay, all right, let me see, let me check with my boss, you know, I'll find out, I'll get back to you. And then by the time you do like five deals with the same bank and the same person, you should be able to, at that point, just have a conversation on the phone and say, hey, listen, last time you needed a listening agreement, you needed this, you needed that, and what do you guys need this time? And they'll say, oh, we need this or that, whatever. And it gets easier and easier and easier and easier because they get to where, like, they know you're easy. They know you're not going to. The main thing is they don't want to have to train you. That's the thing. I have asked so many people over the years in loss mitigation, so many people. I say, you know, what's the number one reason that you say no to working with a new person? And they all say the same thing. They go, honestly, we are so inundated and I'm so freaking busy. I don't have time to train somebody new. So when someone calls up and says, do you do short sales? I automatically assume they have no idea what they're doing or they wouldn't even be asking such a stupid question. So I say no and hang up on them. And then, so I laugh, and I've asked, like, no joke, 50 different loss mitigation reps over the years, and even some of the higher asset managers, and they just go, oh, we just can't stand when people call up and say, I want to do a short sale, and yeah, so I'm working with these people, and I have all this stuff. I mean, if you put together too big of a package, that's one of the things people don't get. Like, oh, the more information, the better. And if you send a loss mitigation rep 25 pieces of paper, I can, oh my God. I remember back a couple of years ago when the recession was going on, and somebody, I don't even know who it was. They're out of business, but they were trying to teach people short sales, and they were putting together these three ring bound, like they put all the package together and go down and get it bound, and like in the little ringlet, not the bound, but like, you know, with the little coil thing down the side. And they were sending in like a 200 page coil bound short sale packet. And I saw, and they were telling everyone, this is the way to do it. The more information, the better. You'll get guaranteed. And I thought to myself, this person has clearly never talked to people in loss mitigation. Because you send them 50 pages in a package, that's going to throw in the trash. They don't have time to read that crap. Who has time for that? So when we go through the first offer and the second offer and the third offer, we're going to talk a whole lot about the mindset of the bank, because that's the part that you guys don't understand. Anyone can tell you to put together a short sale pack. Here, put this together and send it in. And you'll get a few quotes here and there just by accident. But if you can honestly understand the bank and the bank's point of view and why they are the way they are, your life will be so much better. You'll make so much more money. You'll have so many more deals. You'll help so many more homeowners. So just think about it this way. How many of you have ever had like a super busy day? You're so busy. Like you're out of your mind on the verge of snapping the next head off of the next person that interrupts you. Well, I'm the only one? Raise your hands. Yes. All right. So imagine that you work at a desk. And you're so busy that you don't even have time to, like, go pee. And you eat lunch at your desk. And you have so many files. You have people barking down your throat. And then someone like me sends you a FedEx and a coil bound with 50 pages. You're just going to look at that and go, yeah, I don't think so. And boom, you're going to drop it in the trash. That's the end of it. It's gone. That's your package. That's why when you call, they say, oh, we don't have your package. Can you send it again? I have had reps that have made me resend my package four or five times. I'm like, listen, are you standing at your desk? I'm sending this email right now. It's got two pieces of paper. I'm faxing two pieces of paper. Get them off the machine, I'll hold. So I have found that the less that you send in the beginning, the better it is for your deal, because the loss mitigation rep is so busy all day, every day, that they're at the edge and they're ready to snap. And then you come on and go, "Hi, I just did a short sale boot camp. Oh my God, I'm so excited. It's my first deal." Trust me, they are not sharing your enthusiasm. They are not. No matter what you think, they are not sharing the enthusiasm. Okay? So I just like to say very basically, "Hi, my name is Dawn. I'm a full-time real estate investor. I do short sales for a living. I'm working with Mary Smith, case number 1234567. She's over on Elm Street. I have a signed sales contract so I can purchase her property. I have an authorization to release information signed. I'd like to get this over to you right away. Are you the person that makes the decision? Are you the person I need to talk to? And if you are, what else do you need so I can get this deal closed really quickly? I've been doing this for a long time. I'm the easiest person you're ever going to work with. I'll get you whatever you need on the exact day you tell me to get it. I'll have this off your desk closed with a bonus in your hands in 30 days if you just help me get this deal done." And what they hear is like, "Oh, nice. I'm not going to have to do anything." And the thing is, I have a checklist in my short sale program of all the things the bank may ask for. But really, they really just want a hardship mostly. They definitely want a listing agreement these days. They used to not, but they really want listing agreements right now. Right now, and that could change again, but right now they want listing agreements. And they just want to see some tax returns. They just want to be sure that the homeowners can't afford it, not that the homeowners have made the decision to just walk away. Because the homeowner's just going to walk away like, "Ah, screw it, we're walking away." The bank's not going to probably take a short sale. So, but if they see that they really can't afford it and there's a true hardship, then they're more inclined to take your deal. So the easier you are to work with, the more professional you are, the more stuff that you have, the more you have together in your conversation, the more authoritatively that you speak, the more you don't go, "I have an authorization and what else do you need?" I mean, I'm telling you, if you hear someone say to you, "We don't short sales," you need to just go back, think about what you just said, run through the repeat, approve, respond, run through the, "Hey, I do this for a living," run through it a couple times, listen to the CD again, call them back in an hour and say something completely different. They won't even remember it. First of all, they won't remember it too, because the phone rings off the hook 24 hours. If you wait one day and call the next day, they will not even know that you've ever spoken. And especially if you don't have, like, my name is Dawn. So if they heard my name and they heard me say Dawn, because, you know, usually they're not even listening. They're just like, "Yeah, okay, all right, yeah, okay." But if they actually heard me, then they'll be like, "Dawn, that's a really super unusual name. Did I not talk to you yesterday?" But if you have a regular name, well, not that mine's not regular, but if you have a more common name, if you have a more common name, they will, I swear to you, they will not even know that you guys have ever even spoken. They'll just be like, "Okay, yeah, oh, okay, good. Let me check that file." So it really is all in your presentation. And I always tell people, presentation is everything. When you walk out the door every day, you're presenting yourself to the world, whether you're in a nice outfit or the rattiest pair of scrubs that you own. That's how you're presenting yourself to the world. When you go to your RIA group, that's how you're presenting yourself to people. "Yep, this is me in my sloppy ass clothes. I look like a homeless person because I've owned this jacket for 30 years. You can't believe the stuff that people wear to RIA meetings. I look at them and I'm like, seriously? If you knocked on my door, I would like to, like, I needed to give you a handout. So how you present yourself on the phone is also going to be really important, because These people, the bank, they need help. They need you to be easy and professional, and the homeowners need help. So really, everyone around you needs help at this time. It's up to you to do a good job and help everyone, and that's how you get your paycheck. Your paycheck is a direct relation of how important your job is. So if you're making hamburgers at McDonald's, you're probably getting paid, I don't even know, what do they pay? 10, 11 bucks an hour, something like that. So if you're making 10, 11 bucks an hour, that's because you're flipping a burger. If you are helping someone get a fresh start from their home, which is the largest asset they're ever going to own, most of the people on the face of the earth, the biggest thing, the most important thing they'll ever own is their house. There are just a handful of people like you and me that get into investing and own rentals and storage units and commercial buildings. And, you know, we get into all that kind of stuff. So we're like the one percenters. We're the people that get out of the box and go do the other stuff. But everybody else, I think, what is the statistic? There's some statistic like 85% of the people just work their whole life and live on retirement. And then like another 10%, which puts it to 95%, become like above average and have some sort of wealth. And just like the top 5% are the ones that like kick butt and take names and become the millionaires of the world. So I want you to be like in the very top echelon of the people with me. So in order to do that, you have to remember, okay, what my paycheck is directly related to the problem that I solve. So I'm solving a problem with the bank because I'm getting a house off of their books, getting a house off their books, which helps them. It helps with their credit reports. It helps with their profit and loss. It helps with all their stuff. So I'm helping the bank, and I'm helping this homeowner get relocated and get a fresh start. So I'm helping the homeowner. So I should make some money for that. I'm worth more than $5,000 or $10,000. I'm a $30,000 a deal person. That's how much I feel like I should be making. And if you live in a place where the houses only cost $30,000, move. And you think I'm kidding. I am not. Don't go work in a neighborhood where houses cost 12 grand. Because you know what you're going to make? 2,000 bucks. How much money and how many deals you have to do to make any money at a couple thousand bucks a pop? Go work in a different neighborhood. Work in a different state. We buy out-of-state properties all the time. Work in a different state. Work someplace else. Be someplace else where you can make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 on a house that you're just flipping the contract on. You make that kind of money, it's not long before your dollar signs and your zeros start getting higher and higher and higher, and next thing you know, you got a comma, and now you're making six figures, and next thing you know, there's another comma, you're making seven figures, and it starts with you deciding your value, deciding your worth, recognizing that you are actually a problem solver, and you get paid for that. So how much are you worth for solving a problem of a homeowner losing their largest asset, catching them at their worst time emotionally, helping them to get a fresh start, and also working with a bank rep who is inundated, probably hates their job. You're that little ray of sunshine that calls them up and says, "Hey, what's up, girl? This is Dwan. What's up, dude? What's up? Hey, listen, the deal's done. Thank you so much. I'm sending you a little gift. I just want to say thanks. You were great." So that's you. You're that person. You're that great, awesome, problem-solving person. So take away all your fears. And some of you are probably like, "Oh, my gosh, I'm so scared to talk to a bank." Get rid of all your fears because you are the key. You are the center of this little universe right now. You're helping homeowners. You're helping the bank. You're helping the loss mitigation rep. Helping yourself, you are the one that everyone is rolling and circling around. You're the nucleus. So you're the one that's going to get paid and make a bunch of money, and you're the one that's going to be the superstar. All right, you got that? So we're going to start next week talking about the first offer, and then the next week the second offer, and then the last week the third offer, and then the last week on closing the actual deal and how that's going to look to you. So next week, we're going to talk about starting to find your team players, because you're going to need to have a real estate agent pretty quick. So we're going to start talking about that next week. And this week, I want you to focus on knocking on the 10 doors. I want you to either get some late leads or go to the public trustees, or not the public trustee, the public records. I want you to go to the public records, and I want you to look through the foreclosures, the divorces, especially the bankruptcies. Keep in mind, 75% of the people that filed bankruptcy just tried to stop sale of their house. So I want you to do that. I want you to hit your 10 doors, and this week you have no excuse not to get your 25 signs out. And then again, you heard me say, only put the signs in the yards of houses that are vacant, because code enforcement won't or can't find you when you're in a private property in the front yard. Okay? You put them on the street corner, they know you don't own the street corner. You put it on a telephone pole, they know for sure you don't own the telephone pole. So do this the right way so that you don't get any fines. Someone had Skyped me about being concerned about that. So no, you put a property in a yard, it's private property, and you're not trespassing because there's no trespassing sign. And if there is a trespassing sign, don't put the sign there. Use common sense. It's not rocket science, folks. All right, my friends, my family. So I want you to be like super Duaninator minded this week. Like I'm a little powerhouse. I'm going to go make some stuff happen. I want you to have a Duantastic week and a wonderful day. And I really want you to listen back to last week and listen to this week again, because I'm sharing a lot of insights. And the things that when I share all the insights, those are the things that people don't share with you that train you. If you've been through other people's courses, you know they don't, because most people just don't. But I feel like those are the really important things to share, because those are the things that make or break your business. Those are the reasons why you get deals. Those understanding other people's position is why you become as successful as you do. See, for me, I understand your position. I was a broke single mom. I had a welfare card for Medicaid for my daughter. I had food stamps. And I thought, you know what? After I used them once, I thought, no way am I going down this damn path, and not going to happen for me. And I went out. I'm like, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to work. I'm going to take care of my kid. And, you know, so I have been in your shoes. I've been broke. I've been in a job I hated, a whole bunch of them, in fact. I've been divorced twice before Bill. I've been in rotten marriages. I've been in rotten relationships. Whatever your deal is, I'm sure, I not to one-up anybody, because everybody's thing is their own thing, but there's not a whole lot I haven't been through. Not much. And just, I tell you, my fear of daycare, man, that was my why. I'm not raising my kid daycare. I'm afraid. I wanted to raise her so she turned out right. That's why she's so amazing today. And my other kids, too. Once I met Bill, Billy and Chris were only 11 and 13 when I met them. No, 10 and 13. They were 10 and 13. So I was able to be a giant influence on them because they lived with us, and we all, Bill and I, had custody of our kids. So we raised those kids together. And they're amazing children. They're amazing kids. They're amazing adults. All of my three kids are amazing, amazing, amazing. Bayla was the one that got me started on the path, because I didn't want to be broke. I didn't want to be a welfare mom. I was tired of not having money. I was tired of getting fired from jobs. I was just tired of the whole thing. And so I think sometimes people just have to get fed up, and they just have to be tired before they go, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of being, this is what my grandmas used to say, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I was like, what does that even mean? But now I'm an adult. And I'm like, you know, I know exactly what that means. You do. You just get sick and tired of being sick and tired of everything. I'm so sick and tired of this. So I'll be teaching all my little Southern slang as we go along, too. But I don't know. I think people say that everywhere. So at some point you just do. You're just like, gosh, I'm just so sick and tired of being broke. I'm just tired. I'm just burned out. I can't take it anymore. Well, you know what? Then that's why you're here. This is your time. They say when you're ready, the teacher appears. So here I am. And you know what? The people that you're working with, they're tired of being in their situation too. They're tired of the stress of being in foreclosure. The people at the bank, they're tired of jerky investors trying to tell them what to do. They're tired of people not knowing what they're doing. They're tired of all that stuff too. So you just be the one that brings all the harmony and the peace together, and you just make that stuff happen. That's your job, man. Go make it happen. All right, now listen, I want to hear no excuses, because I'm going to be double checking on you guys here. I don't want to hear one excuse why you couldn't knock on 10 doors this week. All that stuff, public records, unless you live in the middle of nowhere, which I do, and it's still online. So get online, figure the stuff out, maybe get on Craigslist a little bit. I think Craigslist would be good for you guys this week too. Foreclosures, divorces, bankruptcies, and Craigslist, and putting out 25 signs, and that you're just going to drive through some neighborhoods. Like I said, level 2 and 3s, nothing less than a 2 minus, nothing more than a 3, and drive through some neighborhoods, get some signs out, let your phone start ringing, start talking to people, practice repeating, approving, and responding, and just start making yourself become the professional that you want to be. Real estate investing is a profession. It's not a hobby. Treat it like it's a job. It's a job. It's a career. It's something that can make you very wealthy. So stop treating it like a hobby, which is what a lot of people do. If you want to do it like a hobby, that's fine. But if you want to do this and quit your job, I got a text yesterday from one of my students that said they just put my 2 weeks notice in today, or they're going to do it today. Today is Monday. Yeah, they're like, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice today. And they're like, no, I'm sorry. Let me restart. They sent me the text on Sunday saying I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice tomorrow, which is this day right now of this call. So they're putting in their 2 week notice. So I'm expecting a text later. Like, I put my notice in. So they're putting in their 2 week notice today. They texted me last night, but they just closed that whopping check for, you know, almost $200,000. So yeah, I'd be putting in my notice too. And even then, put in your 2 weeks notice, go out with dignity, do the right thing. Don't just give your 2 hour notice and walk out the door. Because, you know, you're going to reap what you sow. So you don't want to be sowing seeds like that. All right. So before I go off on a soapbox, I got to go because I feel myself. I feel a soapbox coming on. So you've got your homework. You've got your assignments. You know what you got to be doing. Get your stuff done. And I'll be here with you next week on the same bat time and the same bat channel. Kick butt this week, guys. Don't disappoint me. All right. Next week, same time, same channel. Bye.